Today is July 15th, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover the third consecutive night of U.S. strikes on Iran and Trump's proposed 20% toll on Strait of Hormuz shipping, Ukraine's campaign that has now hit all 11 of Russia's largest oil refineries and triggered 36-hour fuel queues in Siberia, and Germany's projected €750 billion defense buildup that CSIS analysts describe as the clearest evidence yet of an accelerating U.S. burden-shifted European security order. American forces have now struck Iranian military targets for a third straight night, a five-hour bombing campaign that CENTCOM describes not as a punitive one-off but as a sustained operation. Bahrain confirmed new Iranian retaliatory strikes the following morning, though the scale remains unclear. But the more consequential development came from President Trump himself, telling Fox News the United States intends to, quote, keep the strait and probably run it. He's proposing a 20% fee on cargo ships transiting Hormuz, not a blockade of Iran specifically, but a toll mechanism he's calling more effective than direct strikes. The strategic calculus here is worth sitting with. This isn't the United States defending freedom of navigation, which is the posture Washington has held since the tanker war of the 1980s. This is the United States claiming administrative control over a waterway that runs through Iranian and Omani territorial seas, a claim that sits uneasily with international transit passage law. Because the fee would apply to all shipping, not just Iran-linked cargo, it functions as a de facto tax on global trade layered on top of an active military campaign. Iran, unsurprisingly, is calling the strait completely closed, which directly contradicts Washington's framing of a selective U.S.-administered toll. Two governments, two incompatible claims about the same 11-mile channel that carries roughly a fifth of the world's oil. What's genuinely striking is how this decision got made. According to analyst Peter Zeihan, the initial strike order bypassed normal interagency vetting entirely. Secretary of State Rubio and the Joint Chiefs Chairman reportedly opposed the operation on strategic grounds, warning the Hormuz math didn't favor Washington, while Defense Secretary Hegseth pushed it through. No allied intelligence sharing happened before carriers moved into position. That matters because decades of U.S. alliance management deliberately discouraged all but Japan, Britain, and France from building independent long-range naval power, which means Washington doesn't currently have a coalition framework to lean on, even as Iran has shown drone capability sufficient to hit Gulf infrastructure and track shipping near Omani waters. China, as Iran's largest oil customer, and the Gulf states are the parties most exposed if this drags on. While that plays out in the Gulf, a very different kind of siege is unfolding across Russia. On July 6th, Ukraine's Firepoint unit struck the Omsk refinery, Russia's largest, some 2,500 kilometers inside Siberia, using a new drone variant with a range of 3,400 kilometers, roughly triple its predecessor. Satellite imagery confirmed four direct hits, and Reuters reports Russia has suspended processing at Omsk indefinitely, with repairs complicated by sanctions that have cut off component access. That strike wasn't isolated. Ukraine has now hit all 11 of Russia's largest refineries, representing roughly 156 million tons of annual processing capacity. And CNN reports the resulting fuel crisis has spread into nearly all 83 of Russia's federal regions. The strategic calculus here is that these drones are eroding something Russia has relied on since Napoleon and Hitler both learned the hard way, strategic depth. Geographic buffer has always been Russia's core defensive asset, and a drone with a 3,000-plus-kilometer range makes that buffer largely irrelevant. Moscow's response has been telling, an export ban on diesel and jet fuel on top of an existing gasoline ban, and reports that Russia is now preparing to import gasoline. From Kazakhstan, no less, a genuinely striking reversal for a state historian Sebastian Schaffer, once described as a gas station with nuclear weapons. In Chita, fuel queues are running up to 36 hours, with queue positions reportedly reselling for 35,000 rubles, and rural residents are turning to horses and bicycles. And yet, in the same window, the EU imported a near-record 10 million tons of Russian LNG in the first half of the year, an 18% increase generating an estimated $6 billion for Moscow. That gap between sanctions rhetoric and actual market behavior is one of the more uncomfortable through lines in this entire conflict. There's a quieter shift happening alongside the refinery campaign, too. Ukrainian ground robots performed more than 16,600 logistics and evacuation missions in June alone, an 18.6% jump over May and more than double what they were doing in January. At $2,000 to $40,000 per unit against assault infantry pay that's climbed to roughly $6,700 a month, this is a durable cost asymmetry, independent of whatever lives it happens to save. It's the kind of substitution effect we've already seen erode expensive static defense doctrines in Nagorno-Karabakh and in Gulf theaters, cheap, attritable systems steadily displacing expensive, irreplaceable ones. The third story reframes both of the others. According to CSIS's Leona Fix and Max Bergman, Germany is now projected to spend more than 750 billion euros on defense through 2029, about 3.5 times the combined current defense spending of France and Britain, which would make it the world's fourth largest defense spender. Chancellor Friedrich Merz's reform, loosening the constitutional debt brake, removes the formal ceiling on debt-financed defense spending entirely, and Fix argues this is more consequential than Olaf Scholz's much-discussed 2022 Zeitenwende speech. Berlin now has a standalone national security strategy under Defense Minister Boris Pistorius, the first one Germany has produced since 1945. The shifting geography of power here is a NATO map, redrawing itself from Finland to Romania. Internal NATO documents describe an Eastern Flank Deterrence Initiative, an AI-driven kill web integrating sensors, drones, satellites, and automated interceptors built on Palantir software with contractors including RTX, Lockheed Martin, and Rheinmetall. It's a shift from deterrence by punishment to deterrence by denial. And it's happening because, as Fix puts it, the Pentagon is capitalizing on Iran frustration to pull combatant command leadership and force posture out of Europe unilaterally, without the structured, mutually agreed roadmap that was promised at the last NATO summit. The strategic calculus here is that this is burden shifting, not burden sharing, and Fix is blunt that expanded German capability doesn't automatically translate into hegemonic leadership. Unlike Adenauer or Kohl, Berlin isn't embedding its new military weight into EU institutions, and with Germany's AfD now polling as the country's largest party, calling for a security framework that excludes the US and warms toward Russia, Fix warns of a genuine risk, a German-Russian hegemony scenario emerging with no actual Russian threat left to justify it, once today's 95-99% approval for rearmament inevitably cools. One more data point worth holding on to. In the Sea of Azov, Ukrainian drones reportedly struck at least 21 oil tankers and associated vessels on July 11th alone, the largest maritime drone operation of the war, and maritime intelligence firm Starboard recorded a 55% decline in AIS active vessels in that same body of water over less than 2 weeks. That's about the most independently corroborated figure in an otherwise single-source reporting environment, and it tells you the naval blockade without a Navy strategy is working better than most analysts expected. The next 48 hours are worth watching closely in the Sea of Azov and Kerch Strait corridor. Russia's FSB suspended Kerch Strait passage requests on July 10th with no stated end date. And if that suspension extends or if Moscow attempts to force a convoy through under naval escort, it would be the clearest signal yet of how far Russia is willing to go to reassert control over a choke point it's visibly losing grip on. Watch for any Russian naval movement toward the strait in that window. It will tell us whether Moscow is preparing to test Ukraine's drone network directly or simply absorb the disruption. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.